Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN with Jeff Millman, who is a certified dog trainer, a fear-free dog trainer. We'll talk about what that means, and the author of Triggers and Reactions on Leash Aggression. And we talked to you about that, Jeff, I don't know when it was exactly, several months ago when the book came out. And in part, here's why I'm talking with you. For my newsletter that anyone can sign up for at stevedale.tv, I wrote about a new initiative that I am launching called Ask the Dog. We just slid by Dog Bite Prevention Week, and the whole notion of this is to do just what I said, ask the dog before petting the dog. And you thought, wow, yeah, you said you loved it. And I thought, well, let's talk about it on the radio. You know, we've always been taught, ask the person walking the dog. And, well, I think that's a good idea, and I think that's really important. Ask that person, can I pet your dog? I'm fine with that. That's a good thing. But sometimes that person will say yes, and the dog is saying no. Or even for our own dogs who love us and we love them, it's important to see what they're thinking about before we pet them. Now, you get it. You totally understand where I'm going with this. But why did you write me so quickly and say, that's a great idea? Why?
I just love it. It's so important to, as you mentioned, pay attention to what your dog is communicating with you and respect that. Not every dog wants to be petted. Not every dog wants their nails clipped. Not every dog wants, you know, even putting a collar on can be very, very stressful. So if you need to do something such as cutting nails or putting a collar on, the best way to treat that situation and be successful without any aggression or bites is to get a dog used to something. If you're not able to get a dog used to something, or you don't frankly need to, avoid that situation. And both of those are fine. In my current book that I'm writing, one example I use is your neighbor Jim, who your dog barks at. Who cares if he never pets your dog? Just keep him away from Jim. But if it's your parents or children that are around more often, and you really want to make that safe and comfortable for everybody, then work on that by desensitizing your dog to those triggers and get your dog comfortable with those situations. But don't expect something to happen if your dog just isn't used to it or, frankly, is telling you, I don't like that.
All right, so let's talk about this a little bit. And this is where I came up with the idea.
Yeah.
I'm just walking down the street in our neighborhood where there are dogs everywhere you look, which is in part why I love the neighborhood. And our dog, who then was probably 16 years old, our little 9-10 pound dog is just sniffing at the grass. And this other dog is right there, not paying attention to our dog or me, stretching to the end of the leash, looking the other way. And the woman holding that leash says, you want to pet my dog? And I look at her and I look at the dog and I said, no, I don't. And the reason why I said that, and then she walked away in a huff thinking he doesn't like dogs. What does he have a dog for? But the reason why I said that is because that dog did not want to interact with me. Now, would the dog have bitten me? Maybe, probably not. Was the dog snarling, growling, jumping, or doing anything clearly saying, don't pet me? But in dog language, and this is where I want you to jump in here, that dog was saying it very, very clearly. I don't want to interact. I don't know you. I don't want to interact with you, at least not right now. Can you pick it up from there?
Absolutely. So something that you are describing is a problem that can catch people off guard if they're not familiar with what's happening. There's a concept called compound triggers where, let's say that happens four times with that dog and person number four gets bitten in the hand and his person says, oh my gosh, I wasn't expecting that. What's going on? Well, the first three interactions, the dog is saying, please, no. And then eventually he's saying, well, I guess I need to be a little more obvious. No one's paying attention. I have to be more extreme and growl or bark or bite. So you can increase intensity of behaviors if you ignore the subtle signals, which is very unfortunate. So what I practice and recommend is paying attention to the subtle signals so the dog is not forced to be more obvious. And what happens over time... Oh, I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
No, I just want... I'm sorry to interrupt, but I wonder if sometimes...
No problem.
People, even with their own dogs, just don't know. I'm sure this woman wasn't aware. Now, it could be that this dog didn't want to interact with me because of the way I smell. I wouldn't take that person. But it could be that the dog was hungry, and the way the dog was stretching at the other end of the leash was in the direction of home, trying to tell mom, I'm hungry, I want to go home. Or it could be that the dog didn't want to interact with me because the dog was painful in some way.
Right.
I mean, it could be any number of things. And to me, there's two issues here. One, I want to talk further about, and that's the one you brought up. But to me, it's also a welfare issue. I mean, if I see, if you're walking down the street and some lady walks up to you, Jeff, and gives you a great big hug, and you don't know her, you never met her before, well, maybe you would be happy because it's a lady who's coming up the... But you get my point. I mean, that's something we don't do. And it's not only a matter of being rude. It's even beyond that. Is it fair to expect our dogs to always accept people they don't know? What do you think?
No, absolutely, it's not appropriate to expect that. And the most extreme example, or one of the most extreme examples, is veterinary visits. You take a dog who's relatively comfortable and loves the family and pretty much no reactivity throughout the day normally, take that dog to a veterinarian and they're poked and prodded and vaccinated and all the different things. A relatively calm dog normally can be extremely aggressive in that situation. It doesn't mean the dog is broken. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with the dog. That's just an extreme situation where the dog says, you know what, all these different things happening, the smells and the sounds and the poking and prodding, please get away from me. I don't like any of these things. And it's the right of the dog to communicate with us and say what they are comfortable with or not.
And as you point out, from a dog's perspective, they're being clear. This dog just stretching to the other end of the leash was, to me, being very clear. To another dog, it would have been very clear. To our dog, who was just sniffing at the grass, who otherwise might have interacted with this dog. It was very clear this dog, for whatever the reason, just didn't want to have it at that moment. So one question before we break, very quickly, Jeff, do dogs have the right to say no?
100%. Absolutely. And once again, as I mentioned, if it's something like putting the collar on or something that someone has to do, you need to get that dog used to those things. If you just push through, cutting nails is a good example. If you just push through the reactivity and the body language that the dog is exhibiting, that's where it can be very problematic, because once again, the dog has to be more reactive. And then I think we're going to touch on the subject. Other trainers, not what I recommend, would say, oh, the dog is being aggressive. Now you need to use physical methods to stop that behavior. Some people love saying show who's boss, which I think is ridiculous.
All right. Perfect. And then perfect place to pick it up. And we will do that. I mean, are you the boss of your dog? And what does that mean? Do you need to be dominant over your dog? We'll find all of that out when we come back with trainer Jeff Millman on WGN. Jeff Millman is here on WGN. He's a certified dog trainer. And we're talking about, or we were before the break, about do you need to be the boss of your dog? Now, you know, YouTube knows what you like, right? So there I am on YouTube.com, and I'm actually looking for something political I wanted to see. And instead, it offered me this, and I'm just being honest with you, this long, updated review about, I'll say his name, Cesar Millan, the dog trainer, the dog whisperer, and about how, his career. And, you know, I've seen several of these things. Often I'm mentioned in them. I wasn't in this particular one. Victoria Stilwell was my friend who disagrees with Millan, his whole contention. And there are a lot of trainers out there now who say you have to be dominant over your dog. To me, Jeff, there's a difference between being a good teacher, offering positive reinforcement to communicate what is important, as opposed to being dominant over the dog. Can you talk about what the science is on all this?
Absolutely. And one thing I just have to mention is people often say negative reinforcement when they actually mean the term positive punishment. And just something that, you know, is a sure sign that someone doesn't really often know what they're talking about if they use the wrong terminology.
Oh, so, but now you have to explain all that. So I'll let you go ahead and do that.
I'll do it real quickly. If someone wants more information, it's called the four quadrants of operant conditioning. Positive punishment is adding something unpleasant to stop a behavior, where negative reinforcement is removing something unpleasant to increase a behavior. And someone absolutely can do more research into those things. But just the short version is adding an aversive or something unpleasant to stop a behavior can stop a behavior at that moment, and often does, because frankly the dog is tormented, but it doesn't do anything in the long-term emotional state, and it doesn't change the behavior long-term. And that can be extremely dangerous if you have a dog who stops giving signals because he's worried about getting punished in a physical way, and then he just says, well, I can't take this anymore, I guess I need to bite you because you're not paying attention to my subtle signals that I'm trying to tell you. And even if I get punished, I can't take this. I have to bite somebody. And that's where it can, you know, be a very big problem where a dog just bites somebody seemingly out of nowhere, but they were punished into not giving signals anymore.
Okay. I understand all that. And that's in part what you write about in your book, Triggers mm-hmm. and Reactions on Leash Aggression. Why do we see more aggression sometimes when dogs are on leash compared to if they're off a leash?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's think about trying to do sign language with one hand behind your back. their communication is fragmented. They're trying to communicate, run away, get closer, sniff, and the leash causes them to be stiff, which looks like aggression. That's one sign of aggression. If you see a dog walking stiffly or freezing, they also feel more threatened because they can't run away if they want to. So like human nature, if you feel threatened, one option is to fight back. And the other dog also can see that stiffness, which looks like aggression. And let's just say they're not completely comfortable, then they get more nervous. And then it's just a recipe for how to get two dogs to start fighting. So on-leash aggression is a real thing. You could take that very aggressive on-leash dog, put him in a dog park, and I'm not saying to do this if you don't know the results of it, but a dog can play beautifully off-leash, put the dog on leash, and he could bite the first dog he sees. That's a very real possibility. So that's kind of the history of on-leash aggression.
So for dogs that are aggressive on-leash, and would you agree, by the way, that often the word, yes, it's aggressive, that's the mm-hmm. visible action, but their emotion is actually fear?
Yep. Yeah, that's the impetus for it. And absolutely, they're just trying to create space with the stimulus or the trigger in front of them. Getting injured in fighting is very expensive in the animal kingdom. If a dog gets injured in a fight, they can't eat, they can't hunt, they can't play, they can't live a full life. So animals, and this is a huge misconception, is animals don't want to be physical with each other if they can help it. So if they're afraid and they communicate with another animal to back up, if that's what they want to happen, they're not looking for a fight.
And you'll tell me, Triggers and Reactions on Leash Aggression, how to avoid it and how to deal with it. Well, actually, I'm not going to ask you about that now. I'll make people buy the book. Triggers and Reactions on Leash Aggression, which really is a very common problem. So going back to where we began, ask the dog. Do you mm-hmm. think that people sometimes don't understand that dogs are trying to communicate with them all the time? In fact, they are always communicating with us. The thing is, we either don't understand what they're communicating, or we're not even noticing the fact they're communicating.
Absolutely. And thankfully, there's more and more research being done all the time trying to figure out capabilities of dogs and the just the wonderful things they can do and bring to the table, and just the overall relationship that we have with dogs. The joke I like to say with my clients is, we don't have cows sleeping in our beds. They're, you know, they're wonderful animals, but we have such an amazing relationship with dogs stretching thousands and thousands of years that it's what I feel very strongly about is, it's a privilege to have a dog in our home. It's not a right. And if you're not capable of communicating properly with your dog and also respecting what your dog is telling you, I would say that person should not have a dog. Maybe another animal or a fish or something. But dogs are very complex, wonderful animals that we're just scratching the surface, I think, about really what they can do and their capabilities, that they should have gentle, humane treatment and good lives if they're going to live in your house. And if you're just not willing or able to do that, then it might not be the right situation.
Yeah, but sometimes people, I don't completely disagree, but sometimes people just don't know. You know, for example, you can look at an image of a dog laying down, and you can see that dog is totally relaxed and comfortable. Someone else can look at that same image and say, well, the dog's just laying down, but not understanding that dog is actually, by the way the dog is laying down, maybe looked stiff in some way. And you can point out the dog's ears are like this. The dog is laying not on its side, but on its stomach, and its legs are like this, and it's ready. You know that dog doesn't look relaxed. You know what I'm saying? That dogs always are communicating with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was referring to more of the extreme treatment. If a dog is trying to give you signals and then you're physical with that dog, is kind of what I was referring to. Segueing from our previous conversation. But absolutely, even there's a concept, there's a type of it's called a sphinx down, like an Egyptian sphinx, versus a sideways down where the dog's legs are to the side.
Exactly.
If you think your dog might be uncomfortable if they're doing a sphinx down, there's a higher probability that they are uncomfortable at that moment, because that allows them to jump up or run away or do something else more quickly than if they're more relaxed with their legs to the side. So absolutely, all those little details make a difference. And throughout the day, if a dog is communicating with someone over and over and over and just not communicating, or the person is not reading them properly, that's where it can be problematic, because a dog might have to be more obvious to communicate properly. And that's where people can get surprised by a reaction, when if they're paying attention to the more subtle signals, then they will back off or do something different so the dog doesn't have to be more obvious.
Absolutely. Well said. Jeff Millman, dog trainer, great to talk to you. Thank you so much. I usually don't get into deep controversy on the pet show, but here I go. She had a baby at 97 years of age. What's more, the guy, well, she's kind of a cougar, because the guy was 96 at the time. I'm talking about a critically endangered Western Santa Cruz Galapagos tortoise, and they live well over 100 years. So is this a surprise? Yeah, it is. They will typically, mom might have babies when she's in her 80s, but not at the age of near 100. What's most important is mama is doing great at the Philadelphia Zoo, and her four hatchlings are doing well as well. You can read about this story and much more on my website. That's stevedale.tv. Where, by the way, you can sign up for my free newsletter. Comes out once every 2 to 4 weeks. And that is stevedale.tv. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, talking with the president, the important president, the president of the largest animal shelter in Chicago, Anti-Cruelty, also the oldest. Not you, Darlene. You're not the oldest. I meant the shelter. The shelter, to be clear. Just celebrated an anniversary last year, right?
Yes, last year was 125 years of serving Chicago residents and animals. So we're just getting older by the minute here, Steve.
And not you, though. This is Darlene Duggan, who is the president of Anti-Cruelty and has been working in the animal welfare arena around Chicago for all too many years that I remember anyway, Darlene, which just means I've been around that long. You've got a big event coming up May 31st and at a new location as well.
Yes, yes. This year we are going to be barking in the park at Lincoln Park, just outside of the zoo, kind of in Grove 2 is what our specific area is going to be. But, of course, the walk will be all around the area there. And this is one of our largest fundraisers, but it's also one of the funnest fundraisers that we have. Everybody that comes down has a good time. It's a beautiful walk with your dog, with your family, with your friends, sharing time with other animal enthusiasts that love to support our shelter. It is a fun time all around.
Yeah, thousands of people come out for it. And we'll talk about the location and offer the website and all that information coming up. So let me set the scene for you, because I've been out there as an MC for this event for, I don't know, 15 years or something like that, maybe more. I don't honestly know. And here's what I do know. People come with all sorts of dogs. You're going to see big dogs. You'll see little dogs. You will see dogs in strollers. And the thing is, people say, Darlene, and understandably so, my dog is 48 years old. Maybe not that old, but my dog really can't do the walk anymore, you know? So pet strollers now have become such a thing. Here's something, maybe even you, the president of anti-cruelty, may not know. In South Korea, there are now more pet strollers sold than strollers for human babies. And it's approaching that number, by the way, in America, which sounds crazy. But they're a thing, you know. But for older animals, it's a good thing. And you see all these people come together. Is the walk, what is it, about a mile or so?
Yeah, absolutely. It's about a mile or so. And there are some fun things to do outside of just the walk. So even if your dog can't necessarily go that distance and you don't have a pet stroller, which sounds like those are very ubiquitous around town now, you can still come and kind of just hang out at the festival. There will be vendors and food and entertainment. There's lots to do, even if you don't do the actual walk.
Yeah, I want to talk about some of that. So do you have any idea who some of those vendors may be, which include all sorts of different pet products you might not typically see at the pet store?
Yeah, exactly. It is a lot of kind of smaller boutique vendors. You're absolutely right. Things that you might not necessarily see at a big pet store. But certainly things that you would see maybe at smaller boutiques or more family-owned kinds of shops, pet toys, pet accessories, pet decor, whether that is, you know, things that you're going to put up on your wall or things that you can use around your house. It's something for everyone. And like I said, we have lots of food vendors and lots of beverages, and it's usually a really good time.
So last year, anyway, as I recall, I think the year before and the year before that, it was pizza for people that you offered slices. I mean, it's just part of the deal. You sign up, you get some pizza, too. But also, as you walk around, a lot of the vendors offer dog cookies and dog treats of various kinds. I know Hills has been out there for years offering pet food samples. Still the case this year?
Yes, absolutely. Still the case this year. There will be some yummy treats for people, yummy treats for animals, and everything in between.
Yummy treats. I can't think of anything better than that. And this is a rain or shine event. But this event, I want you to talk about the importance of thousands of people and about as many dogs coming out. You can go to a dog show and see all these different dogs. It's the same thing. You get to see all these different types. I have known people, Darlene, I bet you have too, that have come out to this event just to get a doggy fix, because you're going to see it's a nice walk. It's a pretty walk this year in Lincoln Park. And at about May 31st, the weather will be warming up and the trees will be feeling good. And you're going to see flowers beginning to bloom all throughout the park. But above and beyond that, it's a great way to touch dogs. If you don't have a dog, this is a way to, at least for an afternoon, have a dog.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is the way to get your fur fix in if you don't have a dog and want to kind of come in and see all of the different breeds and the different shapes and sizes. And if I could, Steve, actually give a plug for those who might not have dogs right now necessarily, but still want to kind of enjoy, you know, a little relationship with dogs, I would certainly encourage listeners to come down to the shelter on a regular basis or on a daily basis and just hang out with all of the dogs that we have in the shelter. You don't necessarily have to adopt or even have an intention of adopting. We welcome everybody into our building to take a dog out for a walk in our courtyard or just spend a little bit of time. Cats, too. We've got lots of cats at the shelter. This is Bark in the Park is more of a dog-focused event, but it also raises money for us to help as many cats as we possibly can, and that's really important right now as we are coming upon kitten season. We're starting to see the beginnings of the litters coming into the shelter, and any day now, we're going to be filled to the gills, so to speak, with kittens in our adoption facility. So either way, if you're a cat lover or a dog lover, I would encourage listeners to come down to the shelter and just hang out with a pet for an afternoon.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk about some serious topics, including domestic violence and what anti-cruelty is doing for people who are victimized by that regarding pets, because we don't have what some other cities have, but anti-cruelty is providing safe haven. And I also want to talk about cats at Bark in the Park. What? What am I saying? And Darlene is probably thinking the same. What the heck is he talking about? We will find out when we come back, also with more information about Bark in the Park on WGN. Darlene Duggan, president of Anti-Cruelty, is here on Steve Dale's Pet World. The other thing about Bark in the Park, which we're talking about, which is May 31st in Lincoln Park this year, it's a great family event. And I kind of left that part out. I didn't mean to. So these days, there aren't a lot of inexpensive things necessarily to do, period, and to do with kids. And this is a great event. For, I think, the entire family, and that you have all kinds of activities for kids, specifically for kids, Darlene.
Yeah, you're right, Steve. It is a great family event. We do have specific activities for kids. We have a family fun area where kids and parents, too, can kind of enjoy some arts and crafts and some games and kind of a carnival-like atmosphere. We will have agility teams out there, so you can take your dog through an agility course, and certainly we welcome children in there as well to run their dogs through the agility course. There is a lot to do for families. And again, even if you don't have a dog, I would encourage families to consider coming down and supporting the shelter. It's a fun time with or without your animal. But even at that, this is a great way if families are looking for a volunteer opportunity. This is a great way for families to do that as well. Having had small children in my life before, I know that volunteering opportunities for families with small kids are few and far between. So this is another way that people can get involved and kind of engage with our shelter.
So I was emceeing a Bark in the Park event several years ago. I don't remember who the president of the shelter was. I think I do, actually, but I won't say. And I said on stage, how many people here also have a cat or cats at home? And all these people applauded, right? I mean, half the audience or whatever the number was. And I said, why don't you all bring your cats? And the president at that time ran up on stage. He was ready to grab the microphone from me, I think. But what I meant and what I ultimately said was, bring a picture of your cat on your phone, which most people with a cat have anyway, right? Or an iPad, and show off the cat, especially if it was a cat adopted at Anti-Cruelty. I hope you would not be opposed to such an idea.
Not at all. That is a perfect way to involve a cat, because we all know we love our cats so much, but they just generally don't travel well. And putting them in the middle of an event that has a lot of barking dogs would be pure chaos. But with that, I think that's a great way to incorporate your cats. I have seen, too, Steve, people wear buttons that they put on their shirt or on their sweatshirt that they walk through with. There's lots of ways I think that people could get creative and still, you know, air quote, bring their cats along.
Which I love. So we're talking about May 31st, Bark in the Park at that event. But anti-cruelty does so much. And I'll tell you, Bark in the Park helps supports programs like the one I'm about to talk about. So apparently, the experts anyway say, since the pandemic, through the pandemic and post-pandemic, that domestic violence in America is up. And most people have a pet or pets in their home. Statistically, that is the case. And won't leave a domestic violence situation unless they have somewhere to take their animals. So an organization called Red Rover with the Purple Leash Project and Purina is helping to support the Purple Leash Project have said, you know what? We need places for people to shelter with their animals. But Chicago just doesn't have that. Right, wrong, or otherwise, and it's, well, it is wrong, but you'd have to build a place because they are dormitory facilities in Chicago. So having a pet there would be a very difficult thing, and there aren't enough beds as it is. Whole different topic. But the good news, and the topic I do want to talk about, is that anti-cruelty has availability for people that are looking for a place to shelter their animal. Well, then they can escape the abuser. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So our SAFE program, as we call it, is essentially provides a safe haven for just the situation you described. Somebody that is experiencing domestic violence, has a pet in the home, or frankly, even pets, it might be more than just one, and wants to know that their pet is going to be safe should they choose to leave. And you're right. Many shelters in the Chicago area do not accept animals. So that often becomes a barrier for somebody to leave a situation that is unsafe for both themselves as well as their pets. And so what we do is we have a network of foster volunteers that would be willing to house that animal, whether it's a cat or a dog or a bunny or anything in between, while our domestic violence sufferer is breaking ties or is getting out of that abusive situation. So we will keep the dog, cat, et cetera, for up to 30 days while they find more permanent solution for the pet or permanent housing for themselves that will be able to include their pet as well. So in many, many cases, this really is a life-saving program, a life-saving service that we offer to the community. And Steve, I think about it too in terms of disaster relief. Mm-hmm. We know as a field, when Hurricane Katrina hit all those years ago, you saw the images just like I did of people choosing to stay behind, or maybe the right way to say it is refusing to leave their homes that had become unsafe or were going to very quickly be unsafe because they didn't want to leave their dog or their cat behind.
Right.
It's the same situation with domestic violence. The human-animal bond is strong, and it will make us make different decisions in times of disaster or trauma. So having this program as an outlet for folks within the Chicago area, I think, is a huge benefit to a lot of people.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit. We know through now studies that have been done that getting a dog out of the shelter, even for a couple of hours for a walk, turns out to be beneficial for the dog. And you're launching a program that gives people an opportunity to get some steps in and at the same time help their dog.
Yes, absolutely. This is called Dog's Day Out. And this is one of my favorite programs that we have here at the shelter. Without going into too much detail, our length of stay at the shelter, that's the time that we calculate, or that's the statistic that we use to measure how long the animal has been with us before we can place it. Our length of stay is increasing at the shelter. It's due to a lot of reasons. Could be economic. It could be post-pandemic kind of fatigue syndrome. There's a lot of reasons why we're seeing this. So we rely heavily on the community to support us so that we can maximize the impact of animals that we take into the shelter. And one way of doing that is through the Dog's Day Out program. Essentially, you can come down, you can sign a dog out for the afternoon. We'll send you with all of the gear and materials that you need. And you can go off on a little adventure with a new friend throughout the city. We have a list of very dog-friendly places that you can kind of hang out. Some people will choose to just go back to their home with the pet and give them an opportunity to just kind of relax in a quiet environment and hang out maybe on your couch. You know, you can kind of do whatever you'd like with the pet. We offer this program 7 days a week. So I would encourage anybody who's interested to come down to the shelter and ask our staff about the Dog Stay Out program.
Which is so cool. And to learn more about Bark in the Park, it's May 31st. What time does it start, Darlene?
9 a.m. The walk kicks off at 9 a.m. But my advice would be there a little bit earlier so that you're ready to go at 9.
All right. And you could register at anticruelty.org. More information also at anticruelty.org. Darlene Duggan, president of Anti-Cruelty, thank you so much. The next city that has said no dogs, no cats, no rabbits sold at pet stores, Detroit. Well within our listening area. Thank you very much, Detroit. This is such a good thing. Over 400 cities in America, though, have said the same thing. And the entire state of Illinois, by the way, the city of Chicago as well as other states, including California, Maine, Maryland, New York, and Washington, have all said, no. No dogs, cats sold here at pet stores in our states, in our cities. And the reason for that, no responsible breeder ever, ever sells to a pet store. They're getting their animals from puppy mills, I don't care what they say, or maybe large breeding facilities that no one knows anything about. So instead, do your homework before you get a dog or a cat, and don't get that dog or cat ever from a pet store. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.